and welcome to the Track and Food Podcast. And thanks for joining us again. I'm your host, as always, Jamie Ma. Sitting to my left, as he always does, is Mickey McLeod. You're my left.
Not your left. Straight ahead, man.
Yeah, whatever. I like to say left. It makes me feel better that way. Thanks for joining us.
Whatever makes you comfortable.
Well, I am comfortable today. I'm kind of sad today, though, actually.
Why are you sad today?
This morning, I woke up and I was, as I do, get ready, get showered, clean up and all this stuff, and put on the TV and the news was on and it was always talking about all that stuff down in California and the forest fires.
Oh, yeah.
That's kind of depressing. But then also, I flipped to HBO and they're playing the I Am Heath Ledger documentary. Have you seen it yet?
Oh, okay.
So anyways,
way to start off the show on a really sort of like
a somber
dour
note. Well, I know, so I
appreciate that.
Well, Victoria, my girlfriend, had never seen it, so I'm sitting there and I'm kind of watching it with her, and as we kind of dig into it and start watching it, it's about an hour, and I was like, wow, this is really, really sad, actually. Very, very talented, talented man. So, but yeah. It looks nice out today. We're drinking some nice wine.
We are drinking some nice wine.
And we
should introduce our guest.
Yeah, I think we have a guest today. So the last two episodes, if you have just joining us for the first time, I think our last one we did last week. We're doing one again this week, which is rare for us. We usually do every second week, but things fell our way because I'm going to Vietnam next week. But we brought on a special guest, a good friend of the podcast, someone who's been an avid listener and someone we've actually wanted on for quite a while. His name is Jayton Paul, and he works at Hawksworth. He used to work at Nightingale and UVA. Jayton, how are you today?
Yeah, good. Happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Awesome. I think people are probably a little sick of just hearing you and me, so it's actually perfect.
Yeah, no, we're interesting, actually, I think.
You were saying someone described us as like idiots? Yeah, that's pretty accurate.
Yeah. It's funny they had to put idiots.
But fun to listen to. You're right.
Yes.
But, you know, yeah. there's a scale there somewhere we fall in between, so...
Well, I mean, you know, the Ringer NBA show with Chris Vernon and Kevin O'Connor.
They now call
themselves The Mismatch. We need to figure out our name.
I don't know. I don't like that name. I go on record as saying I don't like, in case you're listening to the show, KOC. My cat's meowing already. Shut up, Pete! In case Chris Vernon or Kevin O'Connor are listening to this show, which is percentile 99.9, well, maybe 100% that they aren't, change the fucking name, man. It's terrible.
Okay.
Just call the Ringer NBA show.
Well, I think
Heat Check is good, and there's a few other ones that are good. Like Sources Say, Mismatch. Yeah,
no, you're not a fan.
I'm not a fan.
Take or leave it.
Yeah. Jayton's you're a basketball fan, right?
I am, actually.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Played for a long time.
So we're going to ask you the first question off the top of the head. How tall are you?
How do you pronounce
your name?
Same
height as MJ. I'm 6'6".
Jayton is 6'6".
Same height as MJ.
He's very.
Good. I like that.
He's very intimidating.
Can't jump as high.
Very handsome man, though.
Go ahead.
Okay, calm down.
Oh, this is what the show it is. Yeah.
What? I'm allowed to have a sommelier crush, aren't I?
Yes, you are. Very true. We have two sommeliers in the house.
We actually have a working sommelier here.
A working sommelier, yes.
I am a sommelier by trade, sort of. I don't know. I work
not in practice, yes.
Yeah, not fully all the time in practice.
Not out of practice, though.
Not out of practice.
Yeah. You're on the periphery.
Yeah. I'm just too good. That's why.
Yeah, like a toe in the deep end type thing. Okay, cool.
But we are drinking wine today.
Yes.
Jayton brought us some delicious orange wine.
Yeah. A little Radicon from 2010.
Yes.
Very special.
So anybody out there who wants to know what any of that is, what is orange wine?
Orange wine, in definition, would be a white wine made like a red wine. So as the grapes spend a little bit of time on the skins, it extracts all that color and texture. And you're left with a wine that has almost a bitterness, but also a weight and an oiliness behind it, with flavors that are so reminiscent of both red and white wine, and tasted blind, especially almost in a dark glass, you'll probably almost guess that this is red wine because it does have tannin, because it does have structure and bitterness behind it.
I thought orange peel right away. So it's like that oily?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Intensity.
So
delicious.
Like dried chamomile and like funk. Yeah,
yeah,
absolutely.
One of the first things I'm actually kind of curious is you obviously are going through the Quartermaster Sommelier program. So Jayton and I took this way we first met, Mickey, in case you don't know, we first met through the WSET program, which is the Wine Spirit Education Trust. For anybody out there who doesn't know, if you're thinking about getting education in wine, that is there's various pathways you can go through.
International.
It's international. It's based in London. It was started in 1960, I think, somewhere in there.
Yeah. What's the Canadian one? Isn't there a Canadian one as well?
Well, there's the International Sommelier Guild, which is ISG. North American, ISG.
ISG, okay.
And then there's smaller ones you can take through certain schools. like yeah, universities.
But WSET is like the industry standard.
Yeah, WSET or the court
credentials.
Yeah, yeah,
or like, the quartermaster sommeliers.
Yeah, or the quartermaster sommeliers. It depends what you're looking for, because the WSET generally is more for people that are not necessarily working in the service aspect when it comes to hospitality.
Sure,
be more master of wine focused.
Exactly. Okay.
Yeah.
So we met taking our WSET diploma, which is the highest level for the WSET program. It's the level 4, if anybody out there is interested in getting that. I highly recommend, if you're interested in wine, you know, skip level 1, because level 1 is just useless. And just go right to
pro
level
tip.
2.
Insider right there. Yeah.
That's right.
And then, like, literally, unless you don't even know what wine is and you've never had wine in your life, then take level 1. But if otherwise, go to level 2. It's very beneficial, even if you're interested in wine in some way. I mean, there's a lot of schools all over the country that you can...
Okay, so you don't need 1 to take 2.
No.
And you can just challenge just 4 go, if you're like...
No, boss.
You, there is a prerequisite.
Yeah, there's a prerequisite. So you have to have level 3 for that.
Okay.
So level 2 is pretty, you know, pretty, it's not too, it's pretty easy. It's not very hard for a lot of people. Most people can kind of get by and do it with a little bit of studying. Yep. Level 3, there's a big jump.
Right.
And then level 4 is a big fuck you jump. Like, it's 2 years of hell and a lot of work and essays. And
yeah,
it's a big commitment. Mm-hmm. Anyways, we met doing that a couple years ago. And then you, like myself, are now in the quartermaster sommelier program. So if anybody has ever seen the documentary SOM, which is on Netflix, mm-hmm. which I'm pretty sure a lot of people have, it follows 4 sommeliers. And we talked about this on the last episode, where they're going for their master sommelier.
Yeah.
So that program through the court, which is an American-based thing, and there's 4 levels. There's the introductory, the certified, the advanced, and the master level. You are currently going for your advanced, am I correct?
That is correct. Yeah,
so
absolutely.
I have my certified, so we both have the same certification. He's going through the advanced because he's way smarter than I am. And you just told me that you did your exam yesterday.
Yeah, so I did the pre-course, so an online quiz to be able to gauge your education to see if you're even going to get invited to sit the exam for the year.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So you have to do this once for the course to be able to go to Dallas, to be able to sit down for a 3-day basically masterclass to make sure that you're ready for the exam if you get given a seat in the exam that year. And you have to actually go to the course to be able to write the exam.
Okay.
So I had 3 different cities to choose from: St. Louis, Portland, and Phoenix later this year. Hopefully I get a seat.
Yeah. So that's one of the things that I'm...
Really,
first off, I think you're going to get in. I'm very excited.
Oh,
for
man,
you.
I
hope you do well.
I really hope I do as well.
Pretty confident that you... Once we establish more stuff here throughout this episode, I think people will get a really good sense. I think you're going to be absolutely fine. But one thing I'm really curious to get your thoughts on is, you having heard about what happened with the quartermaster sommelier last month.
Mm-hmm.
You obviously, anybody out there who doesn't know or hasn't read about this, they had their big scandal. For the master exams, information was leaked about the tasting portion for the wine. So when you do the master exams, it's 6 wines blind. You sit in front of a master sommelier. I think it's sit in front of 3.
3 of them.
3 of them. You sit in front of 3 master sommeliers, 3 or 4, and they taste you blind. And information got leaked out about what the wines were. So they found out, and they basically nullified everyone who'd written the exam, outside of one person who wrote it ahead of time. When you hear about stuff like this, does it make you feel apprehensive, or maybe take pause about what pathway you're going through? Because that's...
Yeah, no, I think that's a really good question. I think that it's almost the opposite in the way that the court dealt with it.
Okay.
I think that that is an incredible thing to be able to... first send an email to everyone that's ever applied with the quartermasters and reached out directly, but then also to come together and make a decision like that that can alter people's lives. So you think about how crazy that could actually be. You finally passed one of the hardest exams in the world.
You know, anyone who
finally
was...
I actually personally don't. I know there was a Canadian gentleman, but I don't know him personally. But imagine living in another country, working your ass off every day, grinding in service and studying every night until finally getting to the masters after I don't know how many tries, and then to finally pass only to have that taken from you.
That was the first thing that came to my mind. I was just like, there's probably one or two assholes who ruined everyone else.
Yeah.
And I was like, man, that would be...
Man, I don't know. I think like...
I would be...
That's like the definition of demoralizing.
Absolutely. And like thinking that like you're going to have to come back and do it again, but also they're probably going to make it harder.
100%.
Like,
yeah.
And they're probably going to make it more stringent. And this kind of ties into what you're going through right now, because when I first entered in the court system back in 2013, and I did the introductory, and then I did the certified afterwards. Yeah, doing the advanced, it was just an exam. And they've changed it all since. Now it's like there's a course you have to take, and then I didn't know that you have to do this application process. And obviously, that's because there's so many people applying.
Yeah, and because of this heightened amount of interest, obviously the people that are applying come through in larger numbers. You have in that quiz, I did 45 questions in 10 minutes, and that just
10 minutes.
10 minutes.
Holy shit! I didn't know that.
So it's all online, so you don't actually have the opportunity. Even if you could somehow have a book beside you, there's no way you're flipping through a page or looking online in that amount of time.
Yeah,
because you need to move. And this year was actually the first year I passed the or at least finished the exam. So
how many times have you done it?
I've done it twice now. Twice. Once for the course, and then once yesterday.
Oh wow!
Hopefully,
that's pretty smart though. And I know that for a hiring process for major companies, international companies, they do have that system. It's like a timed online thing.
Yeah.
To sort of not only weed out the maybe half interested people, but also you want your strongest applicants to get to the process.
100%.
I know that there's a hotel chain that both Jim and I work for, and that's involved in the hiring process as well. Without giving too much away.
Right.
Yeah. Like, well, my girlfriend's going through that right now because she's looking to.
It's like a 35-minute, you know, strongly agree, disagree type thing. But there's a lot of data behind it and a lot of thought involved in these.
Do you think those tests, because like she did it last week because she's applying for a new position that's higher up.
Yeah.
She did that basically 35-minute test. Do you think that those, like, it actually is relevant and
actually
works? I can't
speak to what it would, like, how the questions would be for my knowledge. But in terms of like a personality quiz, you can definitely, I mean, there are hacks, and like if you're good at reading patterns, then you can sort of decipher what the answer they're looking for is. But if you're just an honest person and answering the questions correctly, you definitely do get a certain specific type of personality in the sort of front door. And then you have to go through a 5-interview process, of course. Anyways, but. So that's different. That's for personality. So having a quiz in 10 minutes based on just the criteria that's in
it's everything. Yeah, absolutely. So it's from food pairings to just a map of God knows where on Google Earth, and there's a tiny little body of water, and it says name the estuary.
Yeah,
kind of thing. Yeah, it's like okay.
Are you serious?
I don't fucking even. Nuts, yo, absolutely.
Man. You remember any of the questions?
Yeah, a couple for sure. Yeah,
hardest one.
Hardest one.
Or one that you were like, I know that.
Well, actually, one that I was right off the bat was in 2015, these two major corporate beer brands had a blockbuster deal. What two beer companies was it?
Ooh. Oh.
And it gave me a list of a bunch of different ones.
Yeah, interesting.
But I knew Anheuser-Busch.
Well, Molson Coors was way before that.
Mm.
I thought it would be like Heineken. Corona something.
And Heineken was in there as well. Yeah.
What was it?
Anheuser-Busch. Like teamed up or took over Sab Miller, I'm pretty sure.
Oh,
okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Which, I think Goose Island was involved in that.
It would be all under the umbrella.
That's anyway. Not wine.
That's what's crazy connected. Though. It's not just wine. The amount of cocktails I got name all the specific unique glassware for each of the following cocktails, and if they require something that is specific, like a specific vessel to be drank out of. It was an Irish coffee, Hurricane, mint julep, a martini, and Moscow mule.
Oh, I got that one. That one's easy.
And like,
I know the copper cup. Hurricane you've is also
been
glass.
You've also been slinging drinks for quite some time now.
You know, if I failed that part, then
because it's W, so there is a spirit.
Oh, I know there is. Right? Well, they took out in the diploma. They took out the spirits, though. The spirits no longer part of the program.
But right. To get to that level,
And I actually finished the spirits part of my diploma. I haven't finished my diploma yet, but I finished the spirits part. So that's too bad.
Wow,
yeah, the spirits part was that part was pretty easy. I didn't even study.
It was actually probably one of my highest scores.
Yeah, I mean, if you've been around it and you've worked in the industry, right? Very interesting.
So
we're just pouring some more wine.
Yeah,
we got to do that once in a while. We didn't drink wine the last time. I think we drank tea.
We haven't because it's just been you and me. That's and nice. On my reduced drinking
I'm
program.
Bringing this into your guys' home. I don't know. It's all right.
I'm going to be slurring like crazy by the end of this quarter glass
Mickey
of
went
wine.
To, Mickey went to a concert this weekend and he actually didn't drink a drink. So
takes a lot.
Very commendable.
No, November.
Yeah, it was weird.
Who's the show?
No. It's been since July. Life. Yeah. No, I just have it. It's my life now, I guess.
Who's fucking the show?
So boring store. Who's the show?
Yeah.
Mr. Twin Sister. But if anyone listening knows our sister podcast, Beats on Repeat, check out the IG for that. Tristan, my co-host, and who's also a friend of the Track and Food podcast, you've seen that scene we've talked about before in Wayne's World, where he sees Tia Carrera for the first time.
She's the babe.
And his dream weaver. She's the babe. So that was Tristan like the entire show, essentially. And then he actually got a photo with her after, and we got to talk with her. It's so funny too. The first thing he's like, "We got to tell her about the podcast. I'm like, Tristan, just calm down, man. We don't need to tell her about the podcast." And he goes up to the merch booth. He's like, "Yo, we've been a friend of a podcast. We featured one of your tracks on it." And she's just, I can see the look in her eye, like, "Oh my god,
such a nerd."
But she was very cool. Her name's Andrea, and they're from New York. But she was very amicable and very hospitable, and talked to us for a bit, which was super, super nice. Anyways, Mr. Twin Sister at the Biltmore was awesome. It was super good live.
Was he really drunk?
I digress. No, he wasn't drunk.
Okay, that's good.
He doesn't drink his shows, oddly enough, because he had an experience where he got like super wasted and missed like a band he really loved. So like he specifically doesn't drink at concerts.
Like at all, or just drinks a little
bit? At all. Because he wants to take pictures and like talk to them after and stuff.
It's control.
Yeah.
I can't do that.
Getting older. I can't do that. Yeah, you're like
getting older.
You're on everything, and then in the middle of the mosh pit, like in the center of the mosh pit.
Hey man, someone's gonna reach out.
Bodily harm.
Someone's gotta do it.
Anyways,
you know, Wayne's World is like probably one of my favorite movies.
It's up there for me, for sure.
World 2 is great too. It's amazing.
Like all the quotes. We should do a podcast where we just like quote like Wayne's World throughout the whole episode.
You can, yeah, anytime, man.
Yeah. Well, I told you, remember I told you before I went on, I'm already started my column. I'm going to be doing a column on, maybe you can jump in on this one quickly, but we might actually do a full episode podcast on this where we were going to revisit the 1994 Best Oscar race.
Ooh.
Because it's a heated.
Shawshank Redemption, Pulp Fiction.
And Forrest Gump.
Forrest Gump obviously won. Ooh. I'm Pulp Fiction all the
I'm
way.
I'm Shawshank. But I'm leaning Shawshank, but as I was, yeah. So anyways, this has been in my stewing my brain for a long time. I remember seeing Pulp Fiction in theater. I snuck into the theater when I was 14 years old to watch that movie.
Yeah.
And I was like blown away.
If those same three movies came out in any time in the last 5 years,
picture.
Pulp Fiction would have won for sure.
No. But here's the thing. It's like, well, I don't know. That's what I'm saying. See?
Yeah. It's like the
Forrest Gump is really good.
Forrest Gump's really good.
Forrest Gump's really good. So is Shawshank.
That's the definition of a time in American history.
And Shawshank is.
Think of all the movies that are like winning now. Shawshank is. They're all art films and they're all sort of like. Different in a way.
Oh, no.
Right? Like Shape of Water is completely
But they're all amazing. Here's the thing is like any one of those movies could have won Best Picture.
Yeah.
And that's why it's so, you know what's funny is actually I was doing my research for this column last night. 1975 is another year, or 1976 is another year that has very similar things. Dog Day Afternoon, Jaws, Cuckoo's Nest.
Oh, yeah. Jaws won, right?
Cuckoo's Nest won that one year.
Oh, yeah. Strong.
That's Robbery. A strong one,
strong,
huh?
Yeah.
I was like, wow. And Dog Day Afternoon is really good. I think it's Al Pacino's best performance.
Yeah. Hard to argue with that statement.
Yeah.
I mentioned at the top, Jayden, you currently work in Vancouver, so you currently work at Hawksworth.
That's right.
One of the more reputable, amazing, awesome restaurants in this city.
Yeah.
How long have you been there now?
I've been there just about a year. Yeah. In February.
So
yeah,
what's it like working in a fine dining atmosphere like that where you're actually selling top-notch wines, people are coming there for that kind of experience? Because I've actually never done that as a song. Like, because you don't even deal with anything service related outside of that, right? You're just straight
wine. I mean, there's no job below a sommelier. Like, I love clearing tables and running food and helping out. But my sole position there is to strictly take care of the wine experience for the guest.
Well, how is it different from, because you were at Nightingale before this.
I was at Nightingale before this. And opening that place was actually probably one of the best opportunities and experiences I've ever had. The team, the people were so amazing, are still so amazing. We got really lucky to be able to open in a place like that in a building like that. But you have 166 seats there where it is constant turnover service. There's no modifications on any of the food. So the kitchen can run like a machine, but pumping out quality food. And I think Phil is one of the best chefs in the city. He's absolutely incredible, Phil Scarfoni. And I'd follow that guy's food anywhere.
Did you move to Hawksworth because they wanted you there, or did you do move there?
So what happened was actually there was a couple of changes in our hierarchy on the SOM team. So we have about 7 sommeliers at Hawksworth.
And Brian
would be the beverage director, or wine director, for all of it. where me and myself and Christopher Riley were both hired as the senior sommeliers, where Colin Davidson was the wine director of Nightingale.
Oh, okay.
So Colin Davidson moved on to Ireland. Chris went to Hawksworth. They had a little swap. I took Chris's job, and we did like a little run around, and I found myself at Hawksworth, where I kind of worked up to be the whole time. It was always that step up. The service at Hawksworth needs to be tighter. You're only dealing with far less seats and far higher expectation.
It's only, what, 70 seats?
80-ish, yeah. Okay, plus.
Usually with restaurants, I mean, once you get above 80, quality starts kind of start to sacrifice things.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I mean, we recently hired a new chef about 6 months ago, Quentin Bennett, who's done some stints at Noma and some really great Michelin-starred restaurants all over London. South African gentleman that's doing exactly what you should be in British Columbia if you want to come in for a tasting menu. He has an outlined diagram of BC. And as you go through British Columbia, you're tasting different courses on the menu. So right now we have a course, Honey Mussels from Quadra Island. We're one of the only restaurants in the city to get them. They go for so much money in the States, and they're usually only sold off there. We're doing that with little apple caviar, celeriac puree, and smoked fish oil on top of, it's basically in a little smoked mussel tin. So it's almost like when you're a kid camping and you peel back that smoked mussel tin, and turns out it's like the best mussels you've ever had in your life. And he's kind of bringing this all back into really homely experiences within British Columbia. And I think especially for a guy like you too, being in the province for such a long time, it's really cool to be able to see somebody come from somewhere else and be able to talk about and showcase so many local ingredients at their highest degree.
You guys try to push a lot more?
No, we actually have more of an international journey on our tasting menu to pair alongside. From like we'll do right now, actually, we can pour Brooklottie, the Lottie Scotch right now with that course. It's incredible.
Nice.
Highly diluted, almost at a 50-50 degree, so you're not burning off any of that. The alcohol won't be too high, but we tried it out with that course, and I think that'll be coming on right away. But we pour only international wines for the most part. There's a couple of BC really is worth bringing on. Absolutely.
But nothing currently?
Nothing current.
Interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. Huh. Which is interesting.
It is interesting.
Because you're doing a BC food journey.
Yeah.
But I feel like for the value and what our whole menu kind of dictates, you get more out of the entirety of the world as opposed to just British Columbia.
Yeah, no, we're oversaturated with BC wines anyways, as it is here. So yeah, why just focus on what
for sure. And we have such amazing relationships with the people in British Columbia. And I know we got to do a great little interview on British Columbia wine as well, which thank you very much again. It was a lot of fun to be able to do that.
Picking grapes. Scout magazine.
That's it.
For anyone listening.
A little Scout action there.
Is it Scout? Scoutmagazine.ca. Great site.
That was a lot of fun.
You can see how tall Jayden is, isn't it?
That's right. Absolutely.
Yeah. He's legit 6'6". Same height as Michael Jordan.
Yeah.
I was actually recently looking after Jim Carrey the other night. And
oh, how was that?
It was great. He's a really fantastic guy. And he wanted some wine. So I approached the table, said hello. I'd already done my little greeting. And he said, yeah, I'm interested in some wine, maybe some red. I kind of started to pick him apart, like asking like lighter, fuller, heavier body, like what are we interested in? And he didn't actually have anything to give me. So asked kind of a price. He's like, yeah, well, just whatever. Don't be crazy. I'm
like, don't get crazy.
Okay. So
thanks for the help, buddy boy.
Go back into the wine room and I'm like running around like, okay, what am I going to do? What am I going to do?
Yeah.
Go back with four different bottles, all different countries, all different styles.
You guys still selling the Felton Road Block 5?
We don't have Felton Road on the list at the moment, but I'm sure we have a few hidden in our offsite storage for sure.
Last time I was at Hawksworth, they had Central Otago Pinot Noir from Southern Island of New Zealand.
Oh, it's incredible. Yes. They're one of the good ones. He asked me to line the wines up on the table. He's like, I want to take a look at them. Okay.
Is he by himself?
No, he's with, I think, one of his directors. He was here to do the voice for Sonic the Hedgehog.
Ah, cool.
Yeah, the voiceover. So like studio work, which is pretty incredible.
Is that a...
That's a video game.
I got that part.
For Jamie.
but soon to be.
Yeah, so they're like they're making it. Okay.
Yeah, whatever. I guess so. Yeah.
Obviously, it's an animated. It's gonna be a.
Well, yeah.
Make myself
yeah.
stupid.
Jim Carrey in the live action Sonic the Hedgehog.
It's kind of like the Grinch.
Well, he did do the Grinch.
Yeah.
Actually, that's a great idea. Live action Sonic the Hedgehog.
Totally. Why wouldn't they?
My favorite movie is Liar Liar.
Ooh, I don't hate that. The Mask is up great there movie. For me.
Because if anybody was out there really wondering what my
I would go maybe Ace Ventura, Pet Detective.
Dumb and Dumber is pretty good.
Oh. Yeah, that's true.
Big
I
wolves,
think that's
huh?
like probably one of the best comedies of all time.
Dumb and Dumber?
The best comedy of all time.
Oh, yeah. Came out December 16th, 1994, which is my mother's birthday. I remember going to see it in theater first day.
Good, good.
And I almost peed my pants.
Oh, yeah. For sure. Absolutely.
But you are keeping your cool, obviously.
Yeah, of course, man. I mean, you have no
you
choice.
You come across guys like that.
Yeah, well, and I mean, like, yeah, I grew up watching all that stuff. And obviously, as a Canadian actor and being able to, you know, I'm always a big fan. But I line them all up on the table for him. And he looks at the bottles and he's looking up at me. The tables at Hawksworth are quite low. Let's just keep in mind.
Yeah.
And he's looking at the bottles and he looks up at me again. I'll take the tall one.
Classic.
And I just crack
funny.
Up laughing. And I like, are you serious? He's like, yeah, I want the tall one.
Yeah,
I want
like, the tall
okay.
one. Is, yeah.
Have we had a lot of Australian wine?
Tall.
It was 08 Lewin Art Series,
nice.
Margarita Cat.
Yeah, yeah.
He had a lot of Australian wine. He like, so seriously looks at me and goes, no, do I have to drink it backwards? No, upside down. Wait, no, I don't think so. No, I haven't. All right.
So good.
I'll be right back.
You get a lot of, you guys get a lot of celebrities there?
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely.
Of course, Sim Packram too.
Yeah.
You actually, Packram, I think, gets all the basketball players with Jamie, like, goes crazy over.
When I saw Kevin Durant, I was just like, oh!
Yeah. Yo, that's superhero status for me though too, because I see so many actors that like when I saw Tom Cruise and he's 5'7" and
you saw Tom Cruise
I'm just kind of like
is he really
you know if yeah. he, if like I you see him doing all these amazing stunts and like he does all of his own gigs or whatever and then
look at this midget.
Well, it's like not the way I would say it, but at the same time, like
I'll
you see
you.
Someone, yeah, you South see Park someone Center, like Andre Drummond, or like you see some big
massive.
Boys that are like 320 and 6'8", like
he's
rip
legit
you apart.
7-footer.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He's,
why don't you
draw? Oh, yeah,
I think he's like the third or fourth heaviest NBA player.
Oh,
it's
man.
Like him, Nurkic, and then Boban, I think.
Well, and even watching
these are basketball players, by the way, for anyone listening.
These are basketball players.
Well, and there's a college kid, Zion Williams, who's playing with RJ Barrett.
Have you
Barrett.
Seen him play it?
Yo, so he is actually like if Duke
he's
doesn't
good.
Win it, I think Kansas might still win. Or you got to watch Gonzaga too. But Duke, Zion Williamson
with RJ Barrett,
he will go first overall under RJ, I think, just because of his pure physicality.
Yeah,
he is built like a brick shit house, but
like can player,
actually
but
handle
can jump like a basketball player
and jump
and shoot
through the roof.
Yeah.
I haven't seen him shoot lots, but
for people listening, Zion Williams is a college basketball player. Duke is a university in the States, and we're a big basketball fan. So let the tank fest begin.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Can you give me like a quick snapshot of what a day is?
Yeah.
Because absolutely. I think there's a lot of people out there who probably know what a sommelier sounds like or what it is. But what is an actual like, day like for you when you're there?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I mean, like my day starts when I wake up. I usually have a quick bite, a coffee and a shower, and then I'm straight to the books for an hour or two if I can before I can hopefully quickly get down to the gym to get the blood going again and actually get some energy before I can get onto my shift. So I'll start about 4 in the afternoon.
Because are you guys flipping wines on the program often?
All the time.
Yeah, all the time?
Yeah, it's constantly rotating.
Okay.
We also have a large offsite storage that we have the opportunity to be able to actually hold and age wines for however long they may need, which actually helps us out huge.
Do you guys have weekly meetings amongst, there's how many somms that work together at Oxford now?
I would say 6 or 7
six
right
or
now.
7. So on a Friday night, there's probably what, 3 on the floor probably?
3 or 4.
3 or 4? Okay.
Yeah.
Well, also is that offsite storage area within running distance?
I mean, it is. But we have a system where we're constantly bringing wines back almost every...
So someone's en route usually.
Every second night. Yeah, okay. Absolutely.
So for Global Group and on Alberni Street, it's very common. That
is where it would be the same. Yeah, absolutely. Wherever, right? So. Well, and where Nightingale is, that marine building, one of the oldest buildings. Yeah.
That's where it is.
That's, it's in, hidden deep in the trenches in the basement there.
Yeah. How much wine do you guys have on? 10,000?
Yeah, I don't want to overshoot it, and I don't want to undersell it either, because
you don't have to.
Yeah, no, I couldn't tell you off the top of my head. Fair enough. Yeah,
it's
a big room.
Do you guys share wines through both restaurants?
We don't. So we have one, like Bryant oversees both purchasings, and Chris Riley takes after a lot of the stuff for Nightingale, but we will purchase everything separately so that we're not crossing SKUs.
Okay.
I think Omrio is the only thing that we come across on vintage champagne.
When you're working the floor and you're dealing with stuff like that, like with Jim Carrey's guests like that, do you try to lead people on where they want you to take them, or do you try to kind of guide them where?
Yeah, I mean, some of the best guests are the ones that want you to take them on a journey and are open to an experience. And open-minded in general. To answer that question fully, I would say that you're always looking out for the guest's best interest. You tell me that you only drink Shiraz, I'm not going to try and push you onto a Blau Frankish made in a natural wine or natural way from Burgenland, right? There's things to be said about playing into what the likes are of these people and finding out what they like. I mean, being a sommelier is like being a detective. You just are trying to find clues and ask the right things to get a little bit more of a tip to be able to find out, okay, well, if you like this and you like this, this is what you should be having. Or maybe I should come back with this and this and give you a little bit more of an option. Finding out what they need first.
Would you say that's one of your favorite things about is dealing with that?
I would say it's like, probably one of the most challenging things.
Challenging, exactly.
Just from outside looking in, because a lot of times people don't know how to describe what they like.
A lot of people don't know what they want.
Either. Yeah. Or don't know what they want. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Or a lot of people think they know what they want and they actually don't.
Totally.
I run through that a lot. People are like, they'll say something to me where they want, I want a dry wine, but then the way they explain things to me, I'm like, yeah, that's actually not what you wanted.
And
that's your inner dialogue.
I think there's a miscommunication when it comes to people and how they deal with wine and how they talk about wine.
Yeah,
a lot of people don't know how to. I think, as you both just said, Randall, they don't know how to explain what they're thinking. It's like when someone says, "I don't want something sweet." Well, sweet can come across in various ways, right?
Yeah,
sweet. Absolutely. When people think of sweet, they're thinking fruity. Coke.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, but sweet is not fruity, exactly. Right. You know, like when one of the biggest wines in the world right now, Apothic, is very sweet in a lot of ways. It's not as dry as people think that it is.
Yeah.
You know, it's very fruit driven and it's meant to be kind of catered to that really simple.
It also has liquid smoke and a ton of ingredients and added.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That wine's manipulated like crazy.
I think I tasted it and I was like, this is what the.
It's premium price too.
Yeah.
Which is pretty crazy because people have $17.99.
It's like fake vanilla.
Yeah, because there's a line when it comes to with I think Wolf Blast was one of the ones that took over this idea back in the 90s.
Yellowtail.
Wolf Blast and Yellowtail, that's what I meant to say. Is Yellowtail is I think the barrier I think is over $12.99. I think when wine goes over $12.99, that's when people start to question what they're gonna buy.
Yeah. Well, they cornered the market, right?
Yeah, they kind of figure out that that's kind of like the sweet spot price that people don't want to buy the cheapest wine. Chuck. Yeah, they don't want the cheapest wine, but they don't want something too
premium
expensive.
Napa.
So exactly. So they're trying to. So Apothic is like a little more because I think Apothic's 17 or 18,
and it's still pretty premium in comparison to the rest of the world of wine, which is crazy.
Absolutely. Yeah, and when you think about that, like, so prime example, like I'm not trying to sound really badly, but I don't buy wine really that's under a certain. Usually around the $25 to $30 range. Not on purpose.
You can't see because it's a podcast, but you can see the way he said that. Oh my God.
Yeah, that's sounded really bad, but I'm not trying to say that. I'm just saying, like, you know, I'm looking for a little bit more.
Right.
That's basically what I'm trying to say.
Absolutely.
And
agreed.
That's fair.
You can find some wines that are $15 that are drink deliciously. I'm pretty, you know, Vino Verde from La Gazella is like $12 and it's, you know, it's very, you know, but it depends what you're looking for. But when you say premium at $17, like my brain is, I'm like, that's not premium. For me, premium is like $30. But for a lot of people, premium is $17. And that, I think, is an interesting thing. So like, when for you guys at Hawksworth, I mean, your markup can't be probably high, but it's probably not too high. Do you run into people who are willing to spend a lot more? Or do you find people are still kind of...
Well, and that's when we get into the argument of premium, right? When you see bottles over 5,000 go out on a consistent basis, it makes you realize where you are.
But you guys have them?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I'm like I said before, I worked at Global. Mm-hmm. And, you know, say what you want about Global, they carry it like super high in wine.
Absolutely.
Especially Black and Blue.
What's the stuff that's pushed out for you guys mostly? Like top end burger?
Yeah, I mean, in price per volume of liquid, BR Mont Rousseau and BRC.
BRCs. You guys have that Tash?
We don't at the moment. We have Romney St. Favon and Chazot.
What years?
2004 for both.
Okay. So DRC, if anybody doesn't know, Domaine de la Romanée Conti, they are probably considered the most prestigious winery.
I think if you broke down each grape, it would be about $5 per grape in his vineyard.
Top end Burgundy.
Wow.
This is the one that I talked to you about last time. At the Sotheby's wine auction last month on October 8th or something like this. Five bottles of DRC from 1945 and 1937 sold for upwards of like $600,000 a bottle. The total cost was around $2 million. My brain just fucking exploded. I wrote that column and I was like, what is going on with this wine world? Because
it's mental.
Well, I get it. People have a lot of money. People want to pick it up. It's like art. Mm-hmm. You know, those people are never going to drink that wine. It's
kind of
like
price is dictated by it.
Yeah. I don't know. That's just kind of one of the things I'm not a big fan of. About sometimes when I think about with. This is one of the things I kind of encountered when I was taking a lot of wine education is it's just snobbery.
Yeah.
That kind of really bothered me.
Well, I mean,
bit.
The same thing occurs in the whiskey world as well.
Yeah.
Absolutely. The beer especially world is the same well, I mean, thing I think, too. I think.
Didn't they just have it? Didn't the whiskey release here in BC just happen last week?
Yep.
Yeah. And like how many people do you think slept outside for a week?
It was our bar manager. He was first in line.
First in line?
First.
How did he do that?
Man, I don't even know. I don't
did
know
he wait or did he pay someone?
Oh, yeah, he waited. But he also, I don't know how long he queued for, but I saw some of the stuff he got. So I'm pretty excited. Man, just one-off bottlings of like just certain things that you wouldn't really get to see here. A Cherrywood Woodford Reserve, which I've never seen, which is delightful.
Did he get Pappy?
I don't actually know if he got Pappy.
Actually, you know, with Pappy now, you can only get one bottle.
That's right. That's right.
They capped how much you can... Wow.
Yeah, just go in and buy like all the bottles.
Right.
Which we get really lucky with our spirits selection. I think you'd be very interested to hear that we had a bottle of 1865 pre-phylloxera cognac brought in from Grand Champagne. Sold it for $1,100 an ounce.
Yeah.
Excuse me.
Sold the first 2 ounces to a gentleman and he came back the next day and said, how much for the bottle?
Are you serious?
We gave him a price.
Did you guys sell it?
And it's
amazing.
Yeah. Who knows? It's still in the room.
Yeah.
And every time he comes in, he has a little drab and then takes off.
Mickey, would you do that if you had that much money?
I don't think so.
No?
I mean,
own-rooted vines.
Yeah, I mean,
We're talking about history.
Yeah. So if anybody out there doesn't know much about this...
I probably would. This is something. I had the money.
This is no kidding. You're not going to say no.
Yeah, you totally would.
Well, to him, that's like $20, right?
But I mean, if anybody doesn't know about this, but like, this is like one of the most fascinating like trivia or ideas or things in the past of the history. If phylloxera doesn't happen in the late 1800s, Scotch is... That, I can say with pretty much 100% certainty. Because before that, the whole world, especially when we're talking about like drinking world at that time, England, United States, all they drank was cognac.
Yeah.
And then the phylloxera hits, devastates France, devastates Europe, devastates the wine industry. Can't make cognac anymore. Scotch is what people go to.
Yeah.
I'm pretty confident.
100%. Yeah. Absolutely. That's why you have cocktails like the Sazerac.
Yeah.
I personally like it with cognac more.
Yeah. I think it's better with cognac.
And I love American rye, so it's hard to even
but why did
have
switch?
A toss-up. Exactly. But it had to have the change, right? Same with the hanky-panky.
So like phylloxera, if anybody doesn't know, phylloxera is basically this little louse that went into the vines and rootstocks and started killing all the vines, and it happened in the 1800s around
18- Yep, yep.
And then it happened and basically just devastated the wine industry. And so they had to figure out how to combat this. And what it is, they eventually, there was French rootstocks and then there was American rootstocks, and they were different. The American rootstocks were resistant to five. So what they did was they would graft American rootstocks onto French ones. That's how they kind of found a way to get around it. But I think only a couple areas in the world right now are still unaffected. I think parts of Chile are still unaffected. And I think probably
it's kind of crazy to think that becoming more of a reality, even thinking about Canada.
Oh, yeah.
Thinking about British Columbia. I think that it's not too far-fetched to think that it could be here at any moment.
Yeah, absolutely.
I know it's gone through California and little pieces in Washington State.
Well, California, they had to rip up all their vines.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, huh. It happened again in the late 70s, early 80s.
It's total devastation.
Yeah, it just kills the wine industry. And I mean, think about what's going on right now with California with the forest fires right now.
Fires.
I mean, we've been dealing with that now for the past couple of years in BC. I mean, I'm just worried that one day, like, Napa's just going to burn up.
Yeah.
Which we were almost there last year.
Yeah.
Right? You see people like Paul Meyer, their pictures of their vines where they had one section in rows facing east to west and one section facing north to south. East to west burnt completely to the ground, and north and south was still standing tall, which is so interesting to me. Like the amount of the power of wind and how much that actually changes the direction of these flames. It's pretty incredible.
Yeah. I mean,
it's terrifying.
Prayers go to everyone that's being dealing with this stuff right now.
Oh, no, I mean, absolutely.
So tragic happened. I just hope California can get some rain.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So talking about all this, couple questions I'm curious to ask you. Favorite wine region?
Favorite genre of music.
Ah.
Yeah, that's not like, I feel like. Gun to my head.
That's not how this works. You guys.
Yeah. I don't ask
You're the guest. You're the guest. You have to answer these questions.
Yeah, I got you. Let's do, it has to be Burgundy.
Burgundy?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I think like, gun to my head, champagne all the way.
Ooh.
But
that's my number two. Yeah. If I was to do a restaurant, I would just do it an all Loire restaurant.
Oh, man.
Just everything would be from Loire.
Well, we've tossed up that idea before. We've talked about that. And
when I interviewed Lisa Haley,
I'm all about that for sure.
Former wine director for L'Abattoire, she wrote that in her interview at Scout. And she said that if she was to do a restaurant, she would do all Loire.
Oh, yeah.
And I like read that and I was just like, oh, my God.
Loire is a region.
So the Loire Valley is one of the main regions in France. It's in the northern part, and it's like basically this long strip that goes across the country. And it's where you get, the reason why I love it so much is because you get the most, you get a ton of variety.
For value too.
Yeah, and for value especially. But I love wines with acidity. It's because it's so much more north. A lot of the wines generally have really good acidity. And I love Cap Franc, Chenin Blanc. Those are probably two of my favorite grape varietals.
Okay.
And then Sancerre is up there as well, which is probably the home of Sauvignon Blanc. And then I just love Muscadet. Muscadet is wine that's so delicious with like, seafood, and it's grown right on the coast, and then you get bubbles, and then the day, and you just,
it's everything you need, boxes, really.
Yeah. You get everything.
Yeah, absolutely. It's the garden of France. Like, it's green everywhere, and the kings in the old days all built huge castles and chateaus there. It's, I mean, yes. I haven't been, but
yeah. So, like, if anybody out there is looking for a bottle of wine to pick up for the weekend, or you're thinking about something interesting, try to find something from the Loire Valley: Vouvray, Chinon, Sancerre, Muscadet. In good hands. And absolutely. If you can get a bottle of Sauvignon.
Pro tips all the way.
Even better.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Apothic? Not apothic. Okay.
I mean, you can't.
I just drink what everyone else is drinking.
You're a box wine.
I usually just drink.
Box wine
guy. I usually just have Lucky Lager. So, Lucky to be honest.
Yes.
That's the only thing I want after a big day.
Really? I came over here various times in the summertime where you'd have bottles, boxes of box wine.
No, I get the big Magnum, like Naked Grape Big Magnum.
We had a box wine brought in for corkage one night.
Oh, nice. Really? What?
4 liters of Jackson Trail.
Wow. Are you serious?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, wow. I would have been like, oh, this is awesome.
You're great.
$140.
$250.
$250. Excuse me?
Corkage. Corkage is $50, 4 liters.
That's amazing.
And they paid it?
No problem.
Oh my God, that's awesome. Yeah, that's the greatest story I've ever heard. So I don't know if you obviously don't know this, but a couple weeks ago, me and Mike Shum, annoying bartender at a certain hotel in the city at the Fairmont. Me and him and another guy, we went to St. Lawrence. Great. And we did a Krug night.
Oh, I actually heard about this.
Yes. So we did the Grand Cuvée,
yep.
The O2 and the O4.
Yes. What'd you think?
Oh, it was amazing. It was fun. It was such a nerdy thing. And I don't recommend anyone else doing it because it was a really expensive night. Mm-hmm. But have you ever been a part of something like
that? Yeah. I haven't gone out and purchased multiple bottles of Krug on my own, but I was lucky enough. We taste everything at home. So every time any bottle's ever opened, us as the sommeliers taste it before the guest gets it.
Ooh.
That is probably...
There's a trade trip, anyway, or trade tip.
Yeah, that's truly the best way.
Why do you guys do that?
You can look after your guest that way.
Okay, so you want to make sure that you make sure
that
obviously the wine...
That it is showing exactly the way it should be. If it's pre-moxed, if it's tight, if it needs to open up, if it needs a temperature change, if it needs air, if it needs time. There's so many different things. If you have to want to actually like take the sediment away from it or clarify the wine.
So how do you go about it? You go up to the guest, you present the bottle.
Correct.
You say, this is, DRC, you know, whatever, so-and-so, and, yeah. You know, here's your really expensive fancy wine that you don't even know what you're drinking.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And then the guest sees it.
Yeah.
And then you open it there?
No, we don't open anything beside the table.
Okay, so
I retreat back to the wine room where we have all the tools, all the things that can make what we do easier.
Open up the wine, taste it.
Open up the wine, make sure it's showing exactly as it should, set glassware.
And then you decide from there if it needs to be
Correct.
You don't ask.
No. No, their understanding is that I'm taking care of the wine.
Do you explain this to the guests before?
Absolutely.
Yeah, because
some guests don't like that.
Yeah, obviously. Do guests ever complain about you not opening at the table?
I think if I give them the opportunity to say no. I will always say, if you don't mind, I'm just going to go aside into our private room to be able to, well, not our private room. That sounds pretentious and shitty. Yeah. I'm just going to take it into the side room to be able to make sure that your wine is showing as exactly as it should. If you're spending $3,000 on a bottle, you want to know that your money's going to go that length. If you buy a $400 bottle of White Berg in the 2006, 2008, 2009 range, where it could be pre-moxed, anything from the early 2000s through, could be pre-moxed. We need to know because people...
What does pre-moxed mean?
So premature oxidation was a big thing that happened in the late 90s and early 2000s within Burgundy, where they were using, before that, lots and lots and lots of sulfur to be able to preserve their wines. And then moving to a trend where it became less.
So sulfur, if anybody doesn't know, sulfur is used a lot in winemaking. Especially in poor, like low end winemaking, it's heavily used.
Yeah,
a lot of natural winemaking now is going.
It is a natural byproduct as well.
Yeah, so it's put on the grapes right when they're picked, just so they prevent from being oxidized. Obviously, people are doing it to basically mean.
Absolutely, yeah.
So you would take the wine back, figure out, get it all tasted.
Take the wine back, make sure it's showing exactly as it should, and then revert right back to the guest.
You guys ever run into like issues where you open up a bottle, it's $5,000.
Well, absolutely. That's why we're there.
Yeah.
You know, just because it...
You guys have
just
several...
Just because it says Krug on the front doesn't mean it's going to be perfect.
You know, a few of you taste it beforehand?
No. If one taste, we don't want to drink these people's wine. We don't want to take away from their purchase. We want to know that if you're tasting the wine, you are educated enough to be able to make that call.
Okay.
If there's ever a second guess, absolutely.
Okay.
Because you can kind of weigh in on one other person's opinion. But again, you don't want to take too much. Just to understand how the wine is showing, to make sure that the guest is looked after it the best possible way. But to answer your original question, O3 Krug Clos de Menil and 89 Krug Clos Ambonnay side by side.
You had those?
With 96 Krug and 96 Salon and 96 Salas. Yeah.
Hey, if anybody wants to see Mickey's face right now, it's pretty funny. Just went right over your head, didn't it?
It did, but I think I get the sense.
Yeah.
Nice.
Really, really special.
Nice revered. Like I've had the Krug on our last podcast, you know. Told the story.
Very
about
sad
New Year's
story.
Eve. But I drink my kind of go-to premium is Apothecary. They make aged ales out of Bend, Oregon.
Cool.
And they're like $70.
Crazy.
So
yeah, that's your premium.
And that's for a 750 beer.
Yeah.
But I've sort of, that's my treat to myself every once in a while. So I kind of understand a little bit.
Well, there's only 4,000 bottles made of Clos Ambonnet in the years that they ever even choose to produce it. I get very lucky, and that's a huge part of why I do what I do.
Yeah, the 89.
89, yeah. And 03 Clos Ambonnet.
Yeah, I just got a boner.
It's getting hot and heavy in here. Yeah, we get lucky. We get lucky.
By the way, I'm just going to really apologize to Mickey right now and to all our guests. This was a very exciting podcast for me to be.
Of course, yeah.
It's our first sommelier.
Me too, man. Absolutely.
Yeah, and you're going to be working with someone awesome now. You got
our team, Sean
Nelson. Remember I shout out to him last week because he won Slam Slam?
Yes.
He's
from the Vidges?
Vidges, yeah. So yeah. I didn't know this, but he's going to be working on
Hogsworth. I pay attention
now.
When you
he
talk.
He just joined the
most
team.
Of the time. Yeah. Well, it seems that obviously most people listening to the podcast work in the service. That just seems like next level stress when you're dealing with the price point of those wines.
Yeah.
And it obviously depends on the clientele as well.
Absolutely.
For every specific bottle, but it just seems like there would be situations where pretty sour, pretty quick, no pun intended. It seems like a very high energy level. And obviously Jimmy works at a prestigious hotel and we work for a hotel chain. High expectations. So
A lot's on the line.
Kudos to you, man.
A lot's on the line.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, at the end of the day, the whole goal is to make sure that the guest is taken care of. You want to make sure that they get what they're looking for. Even if you
have to tell someone like that they're $5,000 bottle of wine.
Off.
Or
if they bring one in as corkage and I charge them $50, and it's so special to them and it was on their son's birthday and he just graduated high school and they want to finally, like, he's 19 hopefully, but they just finally want to have it. And
you've
then I tell them that like it's corked and like I won't serve it to them.
Have you done that?
Not that exact situation, but imagine it's like it's crippling. Soon, yeah. It's like, how do I tell you that it's so special?
So, hello, sir. Here's your wine. Not corked, but it's really good. It's really shitty. I'm going to pour it
for you. That's a different conversation.
But enjoy.
Yeah.
You say that with a look, not with actual words.
I had 1989 Quail's Gate Chasselas.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And we had one of our servers bring it in who was joking around. He was like, I can't believe I still have this. And it was awful.
There you go. So that's anybody's going to order wine or bring in wine and to ridicule you sometimes.
Well, our elitist snobbist trend in the podcast continues.
Well, I mean, wine is so in general elitist and snobbist, and I think that that's one of the best parts about what you two are doing and what I try to preach every day. It was
just wine, man.
It's juice.
Yeah.
Just grape juice.
Drink it.
And, no one's dying.
I don't like that I work in a system of a restaurant that divides class in what they purchase. And I feel like that's a really hard way to understand what you're actually putting in your body, right? It shouldn't be about class. Wine shouldn't be about how much you have in your wallet. It should be something that obviously like sounds douchey. But like wine, everyone music, everyone can listen to music. Everyone could listen to every separate.
Well, not necessarily, because Mickey won't let me listen to Coldplay.
Right, that's fair.
I just make fun of you for listening to
I don't blame you for making fun of them listening to Coldplay, you know?
Old Coldplay.
He actually pulled down all of his Nickelback posters before I got here.
Yeah. I've served him lots, by the way.
Chad Kruger?
Yeah. I think everyone has.
Pre-haircut and post.
Yeah. He's nice.
Yeah, they're nice dudes. What are they from? Are they from like Maple Ridge or something?
Yeah. I've heard stories. He's got like a massive mansion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know some people who have like been to like a party of his.
Yeah. I've seen him.
Courts, tennis courts.
Oh, man.
All that stuff.
He tends to be at the Roxy a lot.
Yeah.
Joe Walsh came in not long ago.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. A little Rocky Mountain way.
Yeah.
Yeah. A little Eagles reference.
Oh, Joe Walsh did?
Yeah,
he's the guitarist.
He was a guitarist.
Yeah,
he was the one that brought
rhythm, I think.
Yeah, he was the one that brought like the rock to the Eagles for sure.
There's a lot of ex-musicians who have gotten into the wine world, I feel.
That's right.
Yeah, well, I mean, I want to say Rage Against the Machine and Eddie Vedder, I think, has a winery.
Yao Ming.
Yeah. Yao Ming. That's
Yao Ming
right.
Has one.
Yao Ming's yeah, huge. Yeah, he does. Huge. You know, wow. LeBron James is, too.
Well, so LeBron's, is Kevin Durant.
Yeah, like LeBron's massive in
those wine. Mello. Those yeah. guys all drink
oh, and
wine.
So is, no, but like, so is Dwayne Wade, apparently.
Yeah, but last
if
last,
there's any time where any of those people listen to this podcast at this very moment.
No, but last year.
Yeah, we need an NBA Two stuff. Yeah.
ESPN last year wrote a massive column on this where they talked about like the growing infatuation with wine within
absolutely.
The league. And LeBron is like kind of like spearheading this whole thing. He's like a lot of the guys know wine, like Dwayne Wade and Chris Paul and all these guys. But like yeah. LeBron is like
he's
knows,
into it.
Like knows his shit. Yeah. And like knows, like if you go on his Instagram, you see him like posting photos of like him drinking like a new bottle, this. Yeah. Like he is an avid fan. I would not be shocked if he owned a winery and like
he's the GOAT.
He's not a fan of LeBron James.
Yeah, that's fair.
Pete's my cat for anyone listening.
Oh, yeah,
not a fan of LeBron James.
Mickey's getting a new cat, by the way.
Yeah, hopefully. Well, okay, so that's interesting because you were mentioning, or we have been talking about the elitism of wine and the class structure of wine. I wonder how much of that is represented. These guys are multi-million dollar athletes, right?
Yeah.
Are they just into wine because they can afford?
Because they can.
Probably a bit
like
of both.
The Koch brothers, they can just afford to buy everything.
Well, I mean, like one of the Koch brothers, I think the one that lives in Florida, I think he has over like 40,000 bottles.
Yeah, and like never, over half of them were fucking fake, apparently.
Yeah,
but yeah, and if that's the case, fun. And they're only doing it to collect and be snobby about it, that's them collecting and being snobby about it.
Yeah.
The fact that you have some high-class athletes that are interested in something that we all love so much is really exciting because I love three things, like hip-hop, basketball, and wine. And if any of that can come into its own, I'm stoked. You know, like really if Kendrick Lamar and me shot around and then crushed a bottle of red, like we're on the same page. Like we're
pretty
good.
Nice. So like that.
It's actually pretty good.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, Johnny Depp, when he had that interview with Rolling Stone this past summer, they talked about how he like wasted over the last like 20 years of his life. He would drink like $30,000 worth of wine because he's a big wino as well.
That's right.
Yeah.
And first comment, he goes, oh, that's like blasphemous and insulting. I drink way more than that.
That's awesome.
Like we said, man, that's like $20 to him, man. When you have that much money,
absolutely.
It's like,
at that point,
might as well enjoy the finer things in life, sure. Right?
I tell you when I looked after him.
You served Johnny Depp?
Yeah, I looked after Johnny Depp when I was still at UVA.
How was that?
Yeah, it was delightful. He was amazing. Yeah. I had one of my best buddies from back home, from Jasper, Alberta. And he was sitting at the bar, probably the drunkest person in British Columbia.
Johnny was?
No. My good buddy. Oh, awesome. My good buddy from back home. Like he was pushing the levels and he was with another good girlfriend of mine from back home. And they were just holding it down at the end of the bar. Happy to see me. I hadn't seen them in a long time. Two big, big bodies coming through the door. And they're like, how's it going? I'm like, yeah, it's good. It's good. He's like, if we come back in about an hour and a half, there's going to be room for us. I'm like, yeah, man, room's open. I don't know. We close at 2. It's like 10 o'clock at night. Okay. Yeah. I don't think you understand. If I come back with a high profile VIP, is that going to be all right? I'm like, yeah, man, whatever. I'm like, door's open. Get out of here. I'm busy. Totally. Shows up right at like maybe 12:30. While my friends have still been drinking, by the way, he went from the drunkest to the drunkest. They come in through the door. He's got a posse, about 7 different people, a bunch of different bodyguards. He's still strapped in clothing. He looks like Jack Sparrow.
Oh, so this was when they were filming that Pirates of the Caribbean.
It was a while ago. Yeah. And he was decked out in makeup and like had his hair like beaded down and shit. It's hilarious. My buddy happens to be quite the movie buff. Very excited about seeing someone like that. So they go sit down. I get them sorted, get some drinks to the table, and I see my buddy just itching. And he's stewing.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I looked at him, and I like just I had that moment just like,
no.
This is my job on the line.
Yeah.
No. I know what you're doing. Just
he has to have
no.
a good experience. Sit.
So the bouncer, one of the bodyguards, gets up to go to the bathroom. There's an empty seat beside Johnny. My buddy thinks, like, this is my time. He kicks his chair out, runs down, goes and hops on the seat beside Johnny over across the table. And as he's going to sit down onto the seat, another bodyguard saw him come over, so he shifts the seat over right as my buddy was sitting down. So before you know it, my good buddy is sitting on this massive bodyguard's lap looking over the table at Johnny. He's like, this isn't how I expected this to happen.
So like,
you gotta go, just like basically by the scruff of the neck and right back onto the chair. Johnny comes by a little bit later. He's like, hey man, sorry about the guys, they're just doing their job. He's like, oh man, no, that's all good, thank you so much.
Did
like,
he get a word
it's my
it,
birthday
least?
Like
that's good.
So yeah, he came back, it was all good in the end for sure.
Nice.
Yeah, good guy.
Now here's an important question: what did he drink?
You know what? It was nothing exciting. That was highballs.
Highballs. Oh. I'm going to guess. I want to say Jack and Coke.
Oh, that's nice.
No.
Gin and tonic.
Oh, gin and tonic. Yeah. Mm. He's a little more classier than
why
that.
Jack and Coke?
It was a while ago.
I don't know. Captain Jack Sparrow.
Jack Sparrow. Just kinda... Captain Morgan. What was he going to drink? Sailor Scott, Jerry?
Maybe? Get out of here. Yeah, babe. He's still in character. Hey,
don't you think it'd be rum?
Captain Morgan's.
You think it'd be rum? He's a pirate.
Yeah.
Getting harder and harder to pour as we go.
Well, I should have known gin and tonic. That's the classy drink. That's the classy highball.
Yeah, I don't know.
For people listening.
I'm pretty sure that's what it was.
If he's a real pirate, he's drinking rum.
Yeah, that's true.
It's not wrong. Never leave character.
Well, Jaden, this was awesome. Thank you for joining
us
today.
Absolutely. Yeah, thank you so much, gentlemen.
I think Mickey's, Mickey's having a good time with Pete right now. So
kind of shut him up. He's got strong feelings, apparently, about stuff we're talking about.
LeBron James.
He's getting angry. Mostly. Would you rather have LeBron or Kobe?
Okay, hold on.
Like, in bed?
Are you talking about on the Lakers?
No, in basketball, like if you were to pick a, like a player.
Oh, you're just leaving out Michael Jordan, like...
No, I'm not like picking the best player of all time.
All.
We're not picking Michael Jordan the best player of all time. We're just picking
oh, you're
between
just
those
giving,
two.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Like on LA right now.
No. Just like in general. If
in general.
That seems like a silly question.
Start a career.
I mean, obviously.
Like the Mamba mentality, but like LBJ, you know, he's going to be in Space
obviously
Jam.
Obviously LeBron James.
Get out of here.
He's going to be in the new Space Jam. Player.
No, he's not.
Yo, and then, he loves hip-hop and wine.
A better all-around player?
Yeah, it's LBJ.
Who's got five...
Kobe's a better defender and a better scorer.
And a better shooter.
But LeBron's a way better passer.
He's bigger.
And a way better overall player.
Probably. But I'm asking, who'd you pick?
It was neither an option.
Nah, get it.
Derrick Rose.
Derrick Rose. Pre-surgery. No, post-surgery.
No, just all the time.
Days. Yeah.
And like, you know, the emotions run wild and I love it. He's the best person.
I would probably go Kobe.
Ah, yes.
Yeah. Just to give you your
I'm to the dark side. I like it.
Yeah.
Okay. That was good.
But
I'll stick with LBJ. He loves hip hop and wine.
Oh, okay.
Well, hip hop and wine. Absolutely.
Jaden, this was awesome. Thank you again.
Absolutely. Thank you guys for
Mickey,
having
that
me.
Was fun. I think we, anybody out there, hopefully you learned some things about wine today.
I know I did.
Jaden here
repertoire
works
now.
And reps the wine program here at Hawksworth in Vancouver. Go check it out. If you're looking for a wonderful, delicious dinner, he will definitely take care of you. Look for the really tall guy. He's 6'6".
Mm-hmm.
And make fun of him if you can.
Absolutely.
He's 6'6". Don't ask. Yeah.
Exactly.
He's just
don't
tall.
Ask.
He's just as tall as Michael
don't
Jordan.
Ask, don't tell.
And he likes basketball and he likes hip hop. Those are a couple of things you can get to know him. And maybe ask him about his Jim Carrey story. I divulge that for you. Do find us, as always, on iTunes and Stitcher. Please rate us. Say nice things. You know, share
or
us with all your
nice
friends.
Well,
you can say whatever you want. And we'll catch you guys another time. Have a good day.